The comments within the following podcast are those of any show hosts and not representative of any company in which the show hosts may represent.
Welcome to podcast 332. I'm Jared Reimer. Thank you so much for joining me on the final edition of the technology podcast for 2019. I have plenty more, including a discussion of a company that might be good for some, but yet it may not meet everybody's needs. But I like what they have to offer. Where did I hear about them? On Twit. I'll talk about it, and you guys can decide whether you want to give it a shot or not. It's free to use and free to check out. First, my initial thoughts on my iPhone 11. I recently got a new phone, finally, and I am one of these people who don't like getting phones unless it's necessary. But it was, and I am happy to just jump right in. I understood how to use the 11, and of course I'll have more on the 11 in upcoming podcasts. Brian Krebs and other good folks get an award from magazine as the article SizoMag honors Krebs on security, but also other people who are highly mentioned quite regularly on the security field get mentioned in this article. B2K and interesting things in regards to the upcoming assignment number 17. It's mainly Braille 2000. And, of course, I do talk about the assignment and other odds and ends, but how Braille 2000's coming along. And, finally, final thoughts and contact information. I look forward to bringing you a brand new series of podcasts starting in the new year. And it is going to be quite a very interesting time this year in the particular ecosystem, whether it comes to security, Braille transcription, or anything else that might catch my attention. So, have a happy holiday season, everybody. And I will be back on another edition of the podcast next year. Till then, see you all very soon. Thanks for listening. Here comes iPhone 11. Hello, everybody. Welcome to podcast 332. Well, as I said in podcast 331, I wasn't sure if 331 was going to be the end of the year podcast or if I was going to try and do another one. But since the year still has a few weeks, I'm going to try and do my best to release one more podcast. And on this podcast, I want to talk about my initial impressions with my new iPhone 11 I got this past Friday, just before podcast release of 331. Now, 331 has been long ready to go, and I really need to work on getting it out the door, even as busy as I have been in the last while, and I still have quite a bit to do this week before the full holiday season gets underway. For example, I've got a couple of doctor's appointments this week that are necessary, and I'll be happy to see how my health is and whether things need to be taken care of or not. And your phones nowadays, as well as the Apple Watch and other types of technology, can tell you what seems to be normal based on what it knows about you, as well as particulars in knowing other types of things with apps. But what I need to know, I don't believe my phone can tell me. But my phone can tell me that I really understand how to use the iPhone 11 because I have read AppleVis, and every time a new model comes out, I always tend to read what they have to say so that I can educate myself. And it's definitely a good idea to do that because then I understand the basics of what to do. For example, if I pick up my phone right now and I hold it up by my face,
4 minutes ago, fire. The NFL hot
the
seat.
Phone
the
vibrates.
The Raiders were booed out of Oakland.
It is talking because there was an alert, but then it vibrated and it should click as well, and it probably did. And then, for example, I know to start at the bottom and move my finger up. Now, I waited too long, and that's okay. The point is that I understand.
One notification. Sports. 5 minutes ago.
Oh, it's not understanding, so there it goes. It made a sound, so it made a clink.
After a disastrous loss to the Jags, the Raiders were booed out of Oakland with plenty of questions about their future. American football. Try again. Phone number.
So it did open my phone. Now, because somebody called me and I wasn't available to do it, the phone application is open. And I remembered, without having to ask too many questions, to do it this way. You start at the bottom, and you hear clicks. Now, I just brought the phone application to the bottom.
1, 4, 7, 7.
But I don't need
delete.
To dial, so
button.
I don't know if you can definitely hear that, but there are three different clicks. The bottom one goes bonk, the middle one goes bonk, and the third one goes bonk, and it sort of tells me where I am. I know by talking with one of our good buddies who's been on the podcast giving us information, Michael in Indiana, he says he'll never, if he can avoid it, use a phone without a home button. And I say, I understand by reading how to do it, so if it ever came to be that I end up using a phone without a home button, either I'm going to like it or I'll hate it. And the only way to know for sure is to go ahead and dive right in. So, last Friday, when it was time for me to finally get my phone, I said, you know what? I'm going to plow right in to the 11. I'm just going to go for it. I would have preferred to have a home button, but you know what? The 8 will more than likely retire in 2 years, and my family doesn't get phones every year. My sister, for example, had the 6, and so she said it was a good 3 years old and having battery issues, and since I needed a new phone, she took the plunge too. She could have gone to the Apple store and got a new battery and had the 6 for a while longer. But mine started having battery problems, plus it was 5 or 6 years old, and it was time for it to go. I couldn't use it without having it on its charger, and last Friday was really the final straw, where it was like, it must get done. I don't remember, I know we went on Friday, and I spent the day sort of setting it up. I do want to talk about how it was partially my own fault, where LastPass and its backup of my authenticator didn't quite work out the way it needs to be. But then I went in and got new backups for codes in regards to the authenticators and me needing a backup set of codes. And so I did that yesterday by entering one of my backup codes, then telling it, you know what, I got a new device, so here, use this. And I did the same thing with another website, and the only problem I still have is with one of them, but they're going to have to help me, because it's basically saying authentication is failing because the device doesn't match. They don't know about the device. So this might be something that I have to do. And I understand. So it's not going to be the end of the world. It doesn't break anything. I've had to enter passwords into other apps. And definitely, it did keep a lot of stuff like my TuneIn. It kept all of that intact. And it kept some other stuff intact. It kept all my games in order. So, you know, there were some good and some bad. And that's what I thought I'd, you know, sort of talk about. Sort of my understanding of things. And, you know, since I haven't upgraded phones since 2014 when I first started demoing with the 5S, you know, it's time to retire the 5S and use the 11. And I notice some really big things besides it being faster. You know, Face ID took me a little bit to set up, but I believe that blind people need a little more time learning these things. But I have figured out how these things work, and I don't feel frustrated at all. I felt that it was a very interesting learning experience. Herbie has been there to assist me when I needed it. I didn't call him for very much. Just a few odds and ends, and that's why I've given him a discount on services with me, because in a way I'm also paying him to help me when I need it. One of the things that I've noticed was WhatsApp recognized, oh, your phone number You know, we need it because, you know, it looks like you've changed the device. I don't remember exactly what it said, but I gave it my 804 number, and it went and gone and retrieved everything. And, you know, the AT&T folks, they meant well. I told them I wanted VoiceOver turned on. They turned on Voice Assist. It was an easy thing to fix. I know they were trying. They were the only employee there, so they were trying the best they could. Now, turning off the phone was quite interesting because I actually had to ask Siri, because I would hold the power button like I did on the 5S, but it doesn't work that way. Let's see what it tells me. By the way, when I hold the phone up too, if it's paying attention, it actually will unlock, and it has something to do with attention mode, and it knows when you're looking at it. So I can put it down, and it knows to lock. I pulled it up, you know, to my face, and it will, or it should. Sometimes it's a hit and miss, and that goes with any technology. You know, unlock my phone and allow me to use it. And so, it is definitely a very interesting learning experience with the way these things happen. And I'd say, when the time is right and you feel that's what you want to do, then go for it. You know, the carriers will give you some time to try it out, and they'll charge you a restocking fee, but at least you get to try the phone for a while. And if it's meant that you don't really like it, then, you know, you'll pay them to restock it and they'll sell it to somebody else. It's not like it's going to go to waste. I actually got mine in red, and I was talked out of getting an OtterBox. In a way, I understand. I really like the OtterBoxes because it's got a clip. You can clip the phone right there, and you know exactly where it is. You don't feel like you aren't going to sit on it or you're going to, you know, break it. I don't remember the type of case that was gotten for me, but it does fit. It actually fell last night. I didn't want it to hit the floor, but I was fixing my blankets on the bed because I was lying there listening to an internet radio show, and I noticed that it wasn't right, and the phone hit the floor, and it survived. I mean, I didn't want it to do that, but that's why we have these cases. There's different kinds, and of course, I'm not going to tell you what you should use. I think you should, you know, check out the cases like I did. I'm like, you know, this isn't so bad. You know, I prefer this because I'd rather have the phone secure somewhere than not. And it's going to be a learning experience for me. The worst is I could say, you know what, I really don't like my phone in my pockets because I feel like I'm losing it or whatever. I put it in my jacket and I kept touching it to make sure it was staying there. It's just something I am not used to. And so it's going to take me time, and I am all about giving it time now. A lot has changed in my life. Usually, if I wasn't happy, I'd gripe and complain. But at this point in my life, I'm not going to do it. I'm going to give it a good looking. And after a while, I can decide, yes, I like it, or no, I don't. I haven't tried all the games since I've gotten everything on my phone. Mail seems to be working well. I even was finally able to play with Braille screen input and use it successfully. That was one of the reasons why I bought the M Braille keyboard. The M Braille keyboard works. It is a little bit different because it sort of takes the middle of the screen. And so I can pull the right hand over on M Braille and sort of, you know, get myself reoriented that way. Braille screen input looks to be best done on a table, and sort of works the same way as M Braille. Herbie told me about sending messages within the Messages app by just swiping three fingers up in the position, and so I now have a choice on what I want to use. For my logs, I think I'm just going to use M Braille. That means I get it logged and done for. I can't quite tell if Google Docs and this very large Metro log that I'm keeping seem to want to work together, so that I could just edit it and not have to worry about the temporary log that I use every day when I ride the bus. But this is still something that I'm getting a better handle on. So I did play Nature Space, and I noticed that the phone had two speakers, and I remember reading that, but boy, it actually sounds like speakers.
952.
It's not understanding? I'm gonna do it this way then. Oh, it
messages
did understand. Okay.
Page two of four. Adjust page three, page
so
four
if
page
I
space.
Open Nature Space,
Nature Space. Scroll up the Night Aria. Astral Premonition button.
And I play Astral Premonition, which is a new track, you'll hear it.
Astral Premonition playing.
And I'll turn the phone sideways so you can kind of hear it. I don't. What? I almost dropped it. I have it. I can't tell if there's a way to let you try and hear both speakers. But you can definitely tell that it's there.
Saga of the Moonflowers, but Astral Premonition, playing button. Astral Premonition, stopping.
The haptics are kind of interesting. I can feel the phone vibrating. You know, when I double tapped,
Astral Premonition, playing button. Astral Premonition, playing.
I could feel it clicking.
Astral Premonition, stopping.
So,
Nature Space, Nature Space.
There are definitely some new signs. So let's see what happens if I ask Siri how to turn off the phone. Let's learn together. How do I turn off the phone?
To power off your iPhone, first press and hold both the side button and either volume button for 3 seconds. Then move the slider that appears on the screen.
Okay, so that's new. So the side button and one of the volumes.
Double tap to emergency SOS.
And now
slide to power off.
Slide to power off, so that's still double tap.
Emergency SOS.
There's emergency SOS.
Cancel button.
And cancel.
Passcode.
I'm gonna cancel it, and I'm not gonna worry about the passcode. But that's how you do it. It's all a learning experience. And as I go, maybe I'll sort of redemo some of these apps that I've used to use with the 5S on the 11. They're not going to be full demos, but sort of an overview on how they work, i.e. the Capital One app when it comes to working with Face ID. Hopefully I can get LastPass to help me out and get my authentication fixed. with them. But for the most part, I was able to go in, and I think because I have a new device, it was going to cause some problems. I'm not 100% sure, but hey, it's technology. We all learn somehow. So I'm happy with my purchase. I know I didn't buy it directly, but you know, saying that I finally got a new phone for the new year is going to be awesome. And you know, I think that's really why it's time to start talking about the new tech. Let's go ahead and continue with more of the podcast in just a moment. Change of pace. I think it's time to actually talk about something good. You know, this last year has been really awful in breaches and all sorts of stuff. We found some good things, and we've also talked about some other things that might not have been talked about before. But this is in the good news department. And I figured, why not? There's a magazine out there called CISO Mag. And on the 10th of December, Brian Krebs got an award from this magazine called the Cybersecurity Person of the Year. Now, I did see other coverage of this, and there are other people, of course, that could be well more qualified than Brian Krebs. But Brian Krebs has a unique challenge, right? Every time we've talked about a story from him, it's always him in the underground, or him getting caught up in a potential issue. But of course, Brian finds out about these things before things go down and alerts the proper people. And then when they do show up, then, you know, they already know what's going on. And Brian, of course, has had some very harrowing experiences he's talked about on the blog, and I think I've talked about here on the podcast. Do you think he actually is worthy of this award? Well, with what he covers, I think so. This was unexpected. But I know Rick Ferguson from Trend Micro definitely could be there. But what he's thinking in regards to this is Bad News Harbinger of the Year would be more apt. Public speaking is also what Brian does. And what Brian does is alert companies ahead of time, ahead of the news, ahead of the PR. If he sees they're about to get breached, He'll pick up the phone and call them. And he has taken that advice to heart by calling these people before going to the public. Because of the fact that the top security people are being involved in the conversation, according to the article, they are now being taken more seriously than ever before. And that person is on the phone when Brian calls back. So this all takes time, and I'm sure that this outreach will continue into 2020. And the strategic aspect of this is that, according to the article, the Conversations General Counsel is involved. You know, the breach organization has a general counsel that handles all of this, and somebody who's not in the field is dealing with all of it. And it could be misguided, and Brian's then got to explain everything.
Twitter, last pass tweeted at just $4.
So if this is the playbook on dealing with security, having people who aren't guided in how to deal with these types of things because the general counsel doesn't deal with this on a regular basis, then it could definitely go wrong, in my opinion. When there's a C-level security person on the phone, then Brian can be sure that he can get his message across. So this is definitely something I think we should be proud of. You know, some of Brian's reportings could have gotten him in trouble, or even worse. And so I think that this award is good, although of course, as I said, other people are more apt for it than him, but with what he does, I honestly think it's kind of cool that the magazine gave him some good recognition. You know, I've put my thoughts together on some of his articles, and I don't criticize his reporting, but at the same time, I understand what he's trying to convey, and that is, depending on the story, and most of the time it's on breaches, I say, let's see what happens in the long run, but this can't be good. And when he comes out with updates, we can better explain what's happening. And of course, I've talked about the articles before and what I think's gonna happen. And either I'm right or I'm wrong. I don't care either way. But it's interesting to take this journalistic reporting that Brian does and turn it into an award for a job well done in a field that could really cause you problems. Troy Hunt has also been honored in this magazine. Troy Hunt, of course, I haven't really talked about on this podcast. But he was responsible, and probably still is to a point, of the website Have I Been Pwned. And it's linked in this article. Basically, the website allows you to look up an email address that you have and see if it's been taken. I haven't personally used the website, but the service is well worth having around. Rick Ferguson, of course, I follow him, and he is the Vice President Security Research at Trend Micro. And I believe I've read some of his blogs and commented, and that got me a follow. You know, a lot of these guys in the field write some good stuff that's worth commenting on, either linking to an article and giving my thoughts, and I think they enjoy that somebody's taking the time to read it and put their own thoughts together, even if they link back to their own work. And that's what the internet's all about. So this is definitely something that I'm proud to share. I'm happy that the three big people who have done things good in the community, you know, Troy Hunt and this website, which basically collects all of this data and stores it for people to search, and two people who've done reporting on various levels of security, Brian in the underground and Rick in, you know, vulnerability and other research, have some good things to share with their companies. Of course, I believe Brian and Troy work for themselves, although I think Troy also works for another company. And I believe I also saw that Troy was looking to expand Have I Been Pwned and was looking for somebody to help him run it or even buy it from him. But be that as it may, excellent people here. And I can't wait to see who else might end up getting this type of award next year. If you've read the articles by these folks or visited Have I Been Pwned, I'm curious on your thoughts on the reporting and whether the website, respectively, have been of value to you in your daily life to learn about what is out there. I'd love to hear from you. Let's talk Braille 2000. No, not transcription this time, just some very interesting news. I'm still working on assignment number 17, and on the last podcast I talked about the 17 through 19 overview, not necessarily what was covered in each assignment. No, this time I'm not specifically talking about assignments, but assignment 17 brought up a very interesting conundrum. First of all, I have never seen a dagger or a double dagger in Braille until I started perusing assignment number 17. Of course, while I had the assignments brailled, thanks to Braille Institute, all I did was page check to make sure everything was there. I didn't read the assignments all the way through. This was really the first opportunity I've been able to work on such a complex assignment, and for the most part, I understood the concept very well. There were a couple of things that bothered me. First of all, there isn't anything in the percent codes to be able to tell Braille 2000 you want a particular line. According to the book, the notations that are given in what we have seen before as stars, or now as daggers, or otherwise, the fact is that there's a new term now called note separation line. And the note separation line is dots 5, and then 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 dot 2, 5 combinations. And I got to thinking after I initially ran the RTF file through the various percent codes to format it, i.e. 3-1 for paragraph, I could also use indent, and also 5-3 for the notes. And the separation line was used in an example where it has ellipsis, and the sample in the book says, brought in by the Moors star, the offspring was the finest horse in Europe. And then what they did is they have this separation line, and the book says 1-3 for the first paragraph. So the Moors taught the Spanish much about horses, ellipsis. Then there's a blank line, and in brackets it says, note that this line is left blank only because the next page starts with a new paragraph. And so because of that, there's a page separation line, and then the text continues. Now I'm not gonna teach the book. I don't know if I'm honestly correct in the way that this should be done. But Braille 2000 came with a couple of interesting things. First of all, the dagger, which is dot 4, dot 6, and 1456. And the double dagger, dot 4, dot 4, dot 6, 1456, or the ER contraction. And when I was looking at it, Braille 2000 didn't understand these, so it had to be updated in the translation rules to understand them. I was able to then fix them by taking out the hexadecimal combinations and putting in the dagger, and then it properly translated. And I got to thinking as I went to bed late on the 21st, and I thought, you know, it's teaching these various things, and I honestly don't know how to write it. I don't think this can be done in SimBraille, which it could. I found out, which would be quote for .5, and then threes for the 2.5. And so I could have done that in the RTF, but I pretty much have a pretty working copy of a Braille file, which I should probably send to get Brailled, even though I used the Talking Edition to verify formatting, verify page numbers, and the like. Now, in this assignment and in the next assignment, they want us to use the hyphenated page numbering, i.e. 18.1. Now, these manuals are written in this format, and according to chapter 17, talking about pagination, you do not include the hyphen. So it's number sign 17, number sign 2. Now, I did that, and I asked Braille Institute to Braille me my simulated file, which they did. And I did it on an assignment that had already been graded. I had purposefully saved it in a different name, and I put page numbers accordingly. And it did put 1710, but the wrong number sign. And I thought, the only way that this actually works is to do it in six key entry, i.e. set the page numbers and doing it in Braille view. Now, if you've gone to jaredreimer.info, you've heard how difficult this can be using a screen reader to type in Braille. Now, I understand how to do it, and I know what it's going to say and everything. But for the new user, it's definitely going to be a challenging feat. And while I have write-ups of 14 through 16 done, I didn't put up the recordings yet because they still need to be edited, which I plan to do over the Christmas break. And what I'm going to say here is that we've modified the PN code to allow these strange, I call them, page numbers. And to do that, it's PN equals 17 vertical bar 10. And then you could do %NP, and it'll put the page change indicator, if appropriate. Otherwise, if it's on a new page, it will then be done in such a way where you don't have to worry about the print page numbers. And as the lessons progress, it occurred to me while reviewing the instructions for 18 that they basically want everything on its own page, and if it takes more than one page, to use a different running head. In the first 17 lessons, we basically can set the running head with do running head, or after assignment 12, when you start 13, you can do percent run head and forget about it. But there is a problem. And that is, on 18, according to what I've understood of it, and mind you, I'm not there yet, but I was sort of reading the instructions ahead, wondering if this is what it's supposed to be, then this is what I want to find out. And if that's the case, then the only way I got it to work under simulation was to put percent run head, percent PN equals whatever. Then the running head title, which I used to set one. And what I determined was, after set one, I put percent page, which allows me to tell Braille 2000 to go the next page of Braille. Then I tried percent run head and moved on to set two, simulating my playlists as a test for this ordeal. And I found that this wasn't working right, and I would put percent NP and so forth. So the only way I got this to work was to do percent run head, percent page, and then percent NP. And when talking to Bob, this is the right approach. Now, between you and I, this is kind of weird, right? I mean, we are talking about Braille 2000. And this isn't just a Braille 2000 problem. I bet you that there are similar options for Duxbury and Perky Duck. Oh, wait, Perky Duck? Why are we even bringing up Perky Duck? There is Braille Blaster. And, of course, if you were doing this in Perky Duck, I wish you the best of luck. And I'm chuckling at that because I know that somebody is taking this Braille transcription course through someone who is teaching it, not from the lesson book, but another teacher who is certified to teach. And I realize that they're going to end up chewing on trying to teach this if somebody in their class is using the Perky Duck program. Because for those who don't know, Perky Duck is basically the stripped down version of Duxbury. I understand from one of my colleagues that it does include some print, but for the most part, it is pretty tame. You have to format everything yourself. Now, I haven't used Perky Duck. And I think after my course, I will look at some of these other transcription software to see what it's like. I suppose I could also evaluate Duxbury as well to see how it's changed through the years. But I should also get Duxbury installed so I make sure that the DXBs that I'm producing are of value. If nothing else. But with all of these various pieces of software, whether we're talking about Braille 2000, Duxbury, Perky Duck, they're all going to work differently, and they're all not going to have the same functionality. Where Braille 2000, you could pretty much use in a program like Word or Google Docs or WordPad, like I've been doing. And so we have to keep that in mind when we teach. But I'm excited about the new option for the Braille 2000 software, whereby the insert Unicode characters, such as daggers, double daggers, and the like, can be done by lookup. So you could hit Alt and a number, and you can get characters that can't be written on the computer keyboard. And this became apparent when the characters were in the file that I put into a Braille format, which then I had to modify again after understanding some other things that I think that they want us to have. And I realized that I wanted to put up on my website this list of Unicode characters. And when I finally got the access on the 22nd, I realized that I'm not putting up 230 pages of Braille and a large RTF. We're going to introduce this in such a way where they can look it up and get what they want by now having a textual representation of the same edit, insert, Unicode character dialog box. The graphical interface still exists, but Bob added a interface that is text-based, and everything is selected by default, and you can search for anything you want. So you want a dagger? Search dagger. And when you tab, it'll narrow those lists for anything dagger. And I learned that the decimal is 82.24 and the double is 82.25. And if you uncheck the decimal, then you get Unicode. And this way, you can then write it in HTML. I believe it would be ampersand, you know, 8224. And ampersand, you know, 8225, if those were the numbers. I think they're 2020 and 2021. But just giving these examples of how this would work could benefit us instead of me providing this large document. I mean, could I imagine myself saying, hey, I need this entire document brailled with all of the decimal, and it includes a ton of categories, and I don't even think I would need most of them, which is why I've decided to ditch the idea for the website. But as we continue to build out Braille 2000 for the blind transcriber, I realized by reading 18's instructions that we really need a robust system so that we can stay in our native WordPad or Microsoft Word or Google Docs, and we can format it based on the instructions, %runhead, %page, something that would not put the running head on that page. I'm going to play with this a little bit more to determine if we really need it, and I plan to do that later on in the evening when I return from my holiday, as I'm recording this before leaving for the evening. But Braille 2000 may not be the solution for you, and it would be interesting to note how other pieces of software works in the capacities in which I'm now discussing. I'm not necessarily talking about the assignments per se, but talking about how they want the assignment done and how this might work using various pieces of software, and how I figured out how Braille 2000 works with it, with the various methods that I am familiar with in its use. So, what do you think about this type of thing? Having the particulars of your assignment, where if it goes on another page, they want the running head of what they're reading on that second or third page. But otherwise, have the title. And I'm sitting there going, are you kidding me? You know, I don't want to waste paper. And I honestly think that I would rather put the page turn indicator and use an entire sheet of paper. But as we will learn in the last assignment, that there are not going to be full pages of Braille. And I believe that this is the intent of assignment 18, which I'm not going to touch until I pass 17. But I figured I would play with the concept without actually doing any of the physical work that is required of that assignment, since I have not even passed 17 yet. I believe I'm now ready to get 17 into Braille, but due to the Christmas holiday, it will have to wait until after Christmas. So, with all of this in mind, and the background of what's coming ahead for other assignments, what do you think of the idea of having Braille 2000 in your corner? I use Braille 2000's Talking Edition to verify formatting and page numbering, and the whole bit was all set correctly in this assignment. Yes, I'll get a Braille copy. Yes, I want to read exactly what we're dealing with. But, you know, how has other things of Braille transcription dealt with an assignment like these? I'm curious on your thoughts. Thanks so much for listening. Thank you so much for listening to the podcast. This will complete this podcast. In future podcasts, we are going to actually play you the demos and the tutorial in sections of Braille 2000, the Talking Edition. And we are going to play you segments dealing with the transcription course from my experience. I know that I've talked about it in detail, but in these segments, you actually hear how it was done and portions of how the Talking Edition may have been able to help me in this course. But that's not all. I've got something for the very first episode of 2020. But first, I've got to do a little bit of homework on it. I will give you a hint. If you've heard Security Now, you'll know that they are a sponsor. I'm not giving you the answer right now. Email iMessage tech, that's TECH at menvi.org. Text or WhatsApp 804-442-6975. And if you have other contact info, you're welcome to utilize that too. We'll be back after the new year with another edition of the podcast. Till then, happy holidays from all of us here at the Jared Reimer Network. So long.